Contracts, salary caps. Why do our favorite teams make some of the moves they do? It's usually the money. It's time for the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Welcome to another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. I had some really interesting stuff I want to shine a light on today as we deep dive into some legal and business issues in sports. USA Hockey. It's been in the news this week, and the reason it has is we've got a boycott, and maybe that's not the right word, we'll find out. The approaching World Championships are coming up March 31st in Michigan, and members of the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team have decided to not go as they negotiate for increased wages, support, etc. The lawyers handling the case are on with me, John Langle and Dee Spagnuolo from Ballard Spahr here in Philadelphia, and also one of the players, forward Megan Duggan, is with us. So welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Start with John, sort of behind this boycott, and tell me if that's the right word. What is it that you're protesting, and what is the end game here with the World Championships approaching the end of the month?
Yeah. Andrew, boycott is a fine word. In our letters to USA Hockey, we said that the players would not appear for training camp on the 21st and would not play in the World Championship unless we were able to reach an agreement. The end game is to be consistent with the Ted Stevens Amateur Sports Act,
right,
which was adopted in 1970 and provided that all national governing bodies were supposed to provide equitable support. Unlike Title IX, it's not equal. It's equitable support for men's and women's programs where there are separate teams. And if you look at USA Hockey, they do not provide equitable support for the women's and girls' side of the game compared to what they do, particularly on the boys' side of the game. 17 and 18-year-old boys receive the bulk of their spend every year.
And what is, and maybe Dee, you can answer this, what is the compensation to the U.S. women's hockey team as we sit here today?
Yeah, Andrew, the biggest sticking point when it comes to compensation is the fact that USA Hockey, throughout the term of our negotiation with them, which has been over a year now, mm-hmm. refuses to look at the time period outside of what we call the pre-Olympic and Olympic time period, 6 months leading up to and including the Olympics. During that time period in the 2014 Olympics, USA Hockey paid the women $1,000 a month and virtually nothing outside of that 6 month period. So what the players are looking for here really fall into three categories. It's compensation, but particularly compensation outside of that Olympic period, because they are required to attend training camps, playing competitions such as the World Championship, Four Nations Cup, and some other games. And of course, train, even when they are not with USA Hockey, throughout the four-year
right.
cycle, not just during that six-month period. But historically, USA Hockey has only paid the women, and like I said, it was $1,000 a month for that six-month period. And what we have been asking for on behalf of the players is a contract that looks at the time period, the rest of the 3.5 years out of that four-year cycle.
And Megan, what is your life like in the times where it's not an Olympic year? In terms of compensation, in terms of, go ahead.
I mean, as Dee mentioned, USA Hockey from a compensation standpoint provides us with that $1,000 in a, for those a month for 6 months out of a 4 year Olympic cycle. This, you know, the upcoming Olympics, you know, that I'm trying to make that team for is, it will be my third Olympics. So I've been through, you know, 2.5 to almost 3 of these Olympic cycles. So those other 3.5 years, we survived solely, on a stipend from the USOC, the United States Olympic Committee, that comes in monthly. And that stipend, is USA Hockey dictates who within the pool gets a certain amount. And then other than that, you know, we survive on outside jobs, full-time, part-time, you know, support from parents and families and friends and spouses, you know, working clinics, or running private lessons. It's, you know, we have to do those things in order to support ourselves, to train and to live in the places that we need to live in order to train the way that we need to train.
And John, how does this compare to what the men's are being paid, the men's team?
Well, so, if you look at the paradigm, there isn't a strict women's versus men's comparison because the men play in the NHL.
Right.
And they, you know, appear in the World Games and they appear in the Olympics. They might not go to the Olympics in Seoul this year, and that's being discussed right now. The comparison is what they do for the men and boys versus women and girls. And the numbers that they've shared with us, they spend about $4.5 million on men and boys. Boys, meaning 17 and 18 year old boys, they spend $3.5 million a year on. And the boys play in a 50 to 60 game season. And if you look at women and girls, it's roughly $1 million. So it's almost 4.5 to 1 of what they spend on women, girls, men, boys versus women, girls. And their mission is to help grow the sport in the United States. And they're not making any attempt to grow the sport on the women, girls side. It's growing. The demographics are, it's the largest growth area for them, but it's growing despite their lack of support for the women and girls in the United States.
So as we approach the March 31st World Championships, let's bring people up to speed. We've had a deadline placed on by the USA Hockey with an ultimatum. And that was by yesterday, now talking on Friday, the 17th. That deadline passed without you guys agreeing to anything, correct? And what has been their response since that deadline passed?
Let me handle that, Dee. Curiously, Andrew, they heard from us on Wednesday, representing all the players, and Valledupar has been engaged by all of the players.
Right.
They heard from us on Wednesday that the players would not appear on the 21st. Then they send the players an email saying, will you appear? And the players responded no. At the same time, they were telling the media that they were steadfast in getting another younger team to play in place of the women. So we suspect that they wanted to know for sure with that threat that they would get a younger team from the players, and the players are passionate and resolute in their position. And not to suggest a question, but maybe Megan could address the younger player scenario.
So with these, and Megan, you can answer, the players they've talked to, the younger players, they would be, in effect, replacements for you guys?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Obviously, you know, disappointing for us yesterday to hear that that was initially their first response, that they would field the team and that they would be willing to move forward with other players rather than speaking, you know, with us and trying to resolve some of these terms that we had proposed. With that being said, you know, we didn't come to this decision overnight to put something on the line that means so much to us in our entire program. This decision to sit out the World Championships is not one made solely by the 23 girls on that World Championship roster. This is a program-wide united stance. We had, you know, had previously been in contact with our entire U18 team and all the girls in our player pool, and we stand together in this. So, like I said, for them to say that they would bring another team, I think is pretty disappointing to me and everyone else in the program, because we would rather, you know, speak with them and discuss can discuss these terms and these points rather than them kind of pushing us aside and, you know, saying they'll bring someone else.
Yeah, it seems like a hardline bargaining tactic. And speaking of those bargaining, Dee or John, how is it going? Are you having conversations? Have you given them, for lack of a better term, your wish list on what would resolve this? And where are you in those negotiations?
Sure, I'll handle that question, Andrew. Just to give you a little bit of background, you know, we first reached out to USA Hockey on behalf of the players on February 8th, 2016, and sent them a letter outlining three general areas, and those areas have been consistent throughout the course of these negotiations. Compensation, particularly outside of the six-month Olympic period, increased programming. In a non-Olympic year, these players play only 9 games a year. And so this is a situation where, yes, they are asking for a living wage and increased compensation, but they're also asking for the opportunity to work more.
Right.
And the third area being marketing and PR and general support for the team to elevate the team's profile. And the team has kept up its end of the bargain in terms of being the most talented team in the world. They are defending world champions. And in terms of being able to market a group and to promote a group, it's a lot easier to promote winners, and this team has a long legacy of winning. But in terms of where we are in the negotiation and sort of what we've asked for, I'd also like to just give you a little bit of history. When John and I first sat down with USA Hockey in our first face-to-face meeting with them in April of 2016, Dave Ogren, who is the executive director of USA Hockey, in opening that discussion said to us, you know, I've been telling my board for quite some time that it's just a matter of time before someone raises these issues on behalf of the women.
Hmm.
So that we are here today on March 17th, 2017, almost a year after that conversation, raising the same issues and pushing for the same issues. As Megan said, this was not a decision the team took lightly. It was a long time coming, and certainly longer, you know, even longer before we first reached out to them, these issues have been around. So, you know, we have throughout the last year been exchanging letters outlining what it is the players are requesting, but those requests have not changed dramatically. They have focused on those three areas. And as recently as March 8th, we outlined in detail proposed terms that followed on a discussion that we had, a face-to-face we had in Denver, flew out to Denver and met with USA Hockey with some of the players, where we again talked about the issues and talked about the lack of funding and compensation outside of that six-month period. So on March 8th, we sent a proposal in detail, and as recently as Tuesday of this week, I had a conversation with USA Hockey's general counsel, and there was very little movement in their position, and in particular, as has been the case over the last year, they refused to talk about the time period outside of that six-month Olympic period.
We then took that to the players, all of the players, and the players instructed us to tell USA Hockey the next morning that based on what had been presented, the players would not appear for training on March 21st and would not play unless there was a resolution of the arrangement.
And are there further talks planned?
We have read in the newspaper that we've been talking to them.
Okay.
they claim in the newspaper to have reached out to players, which is factual. They have reached out to players.
Uh-huh.
And they claim that they have reached out to legal counsel. When I read that in the ESPN online last night, I called Dee to say, did they reach out to you? And Dee said, no, I thought maybe they reached out to you. So we've read that they reached out to us, but they haven't. But we do know that they tried to do an end run and reach out to the players directly.
Did they reach out to you, Megan?
Yes.
They reached out to you directly about bypassing your attorneys.
Yes.
In what capacity? What did they say?
I just had a missed call. I was playing in a semifinal playoff game last night for the NWHL's version of the Stanley Cup, which is the Isabel Cup for our pro team. Basically, get a break from my phone for a little bit and just kind of focus on hockey. And we ended up winning that game. We're playing for the Isabel Cup championship on Sunday. But I missed the call. Obviously was playing in the game. And then, there was a follow-up text message that they wanted to speak. And, I talked to John a little bit about it, and we just decided that, the best thing would be to say, you know, thanks for the follow-up. Please speak with John and Dee, if you want to talk. So that was our only communication.
And Andrew, I have to point out that it's disappointing to us that that USA Hockey was not aware that Megan would be on the ice in a semifinal game. And, you know, to be calling her during that time sort of suggests that they are generally not aware of what's happening in the world of women's ice hockey.
Yeah. One thing I have to ask, I've had on this podcast Jeffrey Kessler and Carly Lloyd about what I think is a similar issue, trying to achieve some equality with U.S. soccer and the women's team there. Are there parallels you can draw to that?
No.
Why not?
I don't think so. So I don't know if you know that I represented the women's soccer players from 1998 till the fall of 2014. I was not involved in the equal pay case. With the men and the women on the soccer side, there are equivalents, meaning there's a men's national team that competes in international friendlies and a World Cup and certain Copa games that they call them.
Right.
And the men play, let's say, 15 to 20 friendlies and competitions a year. And on the other side is the women, and the women play 15 to 20 and maybe a little more. So there's a parallel and a comparable to be drawn between the men and what they're paid and the women and what they're paid. We have not raised the equal pay because there's no parallel. We are proceeding under the Amateur Sports Act because there's a lack of equitable support for the women and the girls programs.
Okay.
So it's a bit different.
I see. Thanks for clearing that up. As we head to this, well, it's a March 31 championships, but as you mentioned, a March 21 reporting time. Where are we going to go with this? In your mind, they're not talking. They tried to bypass you to go to the players directly. They're looking at hiring junior players. What do you see happening as we approach these deadlines?
So as someone who has been a labor and employment lawyer and a sports lawyer for most of my career, some 40 years, and steeped in negotiations, my view of it, Andrew, is that, one, they didn't believe that the women would do this.
Right.
Two, that their initial response was try to go get younger players. And they said that in the media, that they would field another team. They've now backed off that. My view was they were going to go get younger players and then come back to us and say, really, do you want to bypass this world championship? We don't need you. And I think that they haven't been successful with that. They have our proposal, and they've never addressed the 3.5 out years. And I'm hopeful that they're busy looking at that, although they say they won't do that, and that we will hear from them. We gave them sufficient time in advance of the 21st to do it. It's not complicated. If they wanted to be serious, you could have a day of negotiations and a deal wrapped up. And there's certainly time between now and when the World Championship would be played to get a deal done. And they've told the media and they've told players that they will reach out to us. They just haven't done it yet. And I'm hopeful they're preparing.
In terms of terms, I don't want you to negotiate this, you know, in the media, on my podcast, whatever, but would it be safe to say the major negotiating point from your end is to have compensation during the, I guess, year-round throughout the off period from the Olympics, way beyond the six-month Olympic period?
There's two components. There's that six-month period. And there's also, and their proposal on the six-month period is inadequate. And we've told them that. The second part of it is the 3.5 years.
Right.
So we are looking for a four-year contract with appropriate compensation, but appropriate other things too. Equivalency is on the number of physical therapists, the number of massage therapists, the number of trainers, flight arrangements. If there's a direct nonstop flight, the women don't always get that direct nonstop flight and are routed through other cities because USA Hockey wants to save money and they're always sitting in middle seats. So there's even little things like that, equipment being provided. There's stories in the media to the effect that some of the goalies aren't provided equipment when they show up for training. So we're looking for equivalencies for all of that kind of thing.
I wish you the best. I'm going to give Megan the last word here. Megan, anything you want to lay out or anything you want to point out about how much you want to get back on the ice for the team, but what's holding you back, and how solid your group is together right now?
I mean, yeah, without question, we want to be on the ice. That's why we do what we do year round. That's, you know, we've been preparing for this world championship since, you know, the gold medal game of the last world championship.
Right.
And, I think it just goes to show, you know, we're willing to make a sacrifice of something that means so much to us and something that we have dedicated every minute of every day for the last year for. I think it just goes to show how serious we are, about making progress. And, you know, in terms of how united our group has been, I can't stress enough how proud I am to be a part of this group. It makes me emotional. It almost brings tears to my eyes because you can't get things accomplished without standing side by side and hand in hand with each other. You know, 17 years ago, when Candy Granato and some of those girls tried to make progress within USA Hockey for a lot of the exact same things that we are doing, you know, today, 17 years later, she said to us that they weren't as united as this group. And the reason why this group will make progress and will move forward is because of our unity. It starts with our leadership group, certainly. But, you know, our younger players, the U18 girls, anyone that's been involved in this program for, you know, 7, 8, 10 years, or girls that have been, you know, 7, 8, 10 months, we stand together. And I think that's the most powerful part of this entire thing.
Well said. And we'll leave it on that note. We certainly wish you the best. Megan Duggan, forward for the USA Women's Hockey Team, and attorneys Dee Spagnuolo and John Langle from Ballard Spahr in Philadelphia. Thanks so much. Very informative, very insightful for being on the Business of Sports podcast.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Business of Sports with Andrew Brand. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also get additional insider insight by listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and College Draft Podcasts, all at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts are found.